Jerry Bader Show, 9:35. Before the news there, talking about the state Supreme Court race. Quick refresher. February 20th, three candidates, Michael Skrenick, Rebecca Dallet, and Tim Burns. Skrenick is the judicial conservative. Dallet and Burns are liberals. Tim Burns is proudly claiming he'll try to legislate from the bench. Rebecca Dallet has used that to attempt to position herself in the middle. I'm the sensible, moderate, left-of-center judge you should elect. That's not... I would argue the evidence strongly refutes that. And I think her invoking Donald Trump in a campaign ad in Milwaukee and Madison, I believe that's... Let me just confirm that. Let me see. Milwaukee and Madison. The ads began running this week in Milwaukee and Madison. And clearly what she's trying to do in those markets that a lot of liberal voters, she realizes she has to go toe-to-toe with Burns. Burns has been overtly appealing to those voters, and she feels she needs to position herself in those areas as liberal, very liberal. Two, I believe, and I don't know this obviously, I believe she is trying to tap into the anti-Trump sentiment among sentiment. Sentiment may not be the worst word either. Sentiment among the left against Donald Trump. In other words, make a state Supreme Court race about Donald Trump. If that succeeds, it will be telling. But here's something I think is going to be really interesting to watch. You know what that is? This. I am assuming, and again, I don't know, but I'm assuming she's going to buy TV time in markets other than Milwaukee and Madison, i.e. Wausau and Green Bay. Let's stick with those two for the moment, okay? The Wausau and Green Bay TV markets. Now, it will be interesting if she does, and I checked with a source in television advertising that I have, and that source does expect her to buy time up in this part of the state. Earl, what do you think the odds are that she doesn't run the Donald Trump ad up here and that the ad up here has a very different tone? I don't know that she's going to do that. My prediction is she's going to do that, that it will be the tale of two Dallets, that up here she knows that won't play, particularly in the Northeast Wisconsin market. I can't really speak specifically to Wausau. But I think you'll see a different tone because she, I think, will perceive herself as competing for Michael Skrenick votes up here and not so much Tim Burns. That's going to be very, by the way, I could be totally wrong on this. I'm not really predicting it. I will be curious to see if she does that. Don't know. Here's something else we don't know. By the way, one final thought. The conservative, judicial conservative of the three, by far, in this race is Michael Skrenick. It's critical that you vote for him if you want a judicial conservative, February 20th, to ensure that he advances. It would not be impossible for the two left-of-center judges to advance. There's that. Here's something else we don't know. Will Republicans hold the House of Representatives in 2018, in November? Will Republicans hold the House, or will Democrats seize control of it? One of the barometers that's being pointed to is the retirements, and they're adding up, of House Republicans. Let me read the way USA Today is positioning this. Forget running for re-election. House Republicans are running for the exits instead. On Wednesday, Representative Trey Gowdy, chairman of the powerful House Oversight Committee, became the third GOP lawmaker in just the last week to announce plans to leave Congress at the end of this term. All told, 41 Republican House members have said they will either retire or seek another office, compared with 16 Democrats. Some of those lawmakers have been forced out amid sexual harassment allegations, while others are running for governor or the Senate. So they're not all just packing it in. But at least nine are influential committee chairmen who, like Gowdy, are leaving with no scandal afoot. So what's pushing these gavel-wielding lawmakers out the House door? A toxic stew of congressional dysfunction, perilous electoral prospects, not for Gowdy. Term limits on committee chairmen, and an increasingly rightward-tilting party with a president widely seen as erratic at its helm. Now, USA Today doesn't know any of that, but I agree those are all possibilities. Washington's not a very pleasant place for anybody, said former Representative Tom Davis, a Virginia Republican who retired in 08 after 14 years in the House. The polarization and all the gamesmanship can be grinding, Davis said, and the rewards aren't very sweet these days. The public hates you, he said. Doesn't mean you don't get reelected, but you're not getting great outcomes. There is a time to come and a time to go, Gowdy tweeted on Wednesday. Whatever skills I may have are better utilized in a courtroom than in Congress, and I enjoy our justice system more than our political system, he said in a statement. And his announcement comes on the heels of two others. I think the retirements do make it more difficult for Republicans to retain the House. I don't know, though, that Gowdy, that would be the shocker of all shockers if that district did not go Republican, even in an open seat. I don't see that. But, as I said, I don't predict anything anymore. A couple of columns on the prospects of Republicans holding the House. Dan Henninger in the Wall Street Journal today. He opens it this way. It was impossible not to notice that Nancy Pelosi spent Trump's 70-minute State of the Union speech, it was actually closer to 80 minutes, State of the Union speech grimly chewing her cheek. She was thinking, what I know and he doesn't know is that history says a year from now, I will be the Speaker of the House and he'll be on the brink of impeachment. Odds are she's right. Mr. Trump gave a skillfully designed speech. He adroitly wove his conservative policies inside an attractive tapestry of generally self-evident American truths while extending a fist of compromise to his opponents. But history records that the party of first-term U.S. presidents loses House seats in the midterms. If Republicans suffer a net loss of 24 seats, Mr. Trump will fall into the hands of Mrs. Pelosi's Madame Defarge, keyword guillotine. In his State of the Union, Mr. Trump loaded up his presidency on the strong economy, jobs, and low employment. It's the economy, stupid, is a good political bet, but it isn't decisive. Then Henninger does a history lesson on midterms. He's trying to use history as a tea leaf reading to get an idea of what the prospects are for Republicans holding the House. Again, the magic number is 24, net loss of 24 seats. Keep that number in the back of your head. Net loss, 24 seats. LBJ, Johnson's midterm elections in 1966, came amid a 3.8% unemployment rate delivered by the 1964 tax cuts. He lost 47 House seats. Henninger's point is a strong economy did not save LBJ in terms of carnage, midterm carnage. George W. Bush had an unemployment rate of 4.6% in 06 and lost 30 seats. For both LBJ and W, the effects of a prolonged war, Vietnam and Iraq, undermined a strong economy. I think Henninger's just completely wrong there. Vietnam was not a weight in 66. A prolonged war? It had been 2 years, after the Gulf of Tonkin. It had been longer than that. Yeah, but Vietnam wasn't Vietnam as we think of it now. in 66. So I disagree with Henninger. I think that's an inaccurate reading of history to say that the 66 midterms were dramatically impacted by Vietnam. The protests hadn't even really started then. I just think he's wrong on that. So I disagree with that. The absence of a big war is a plus for Mr. Trump. A remarkably long economic recovery is headed toward its ninth year, and maybe it will carry Republicans into 2019 if the recovery falters. A destabilizing trade war, rising interest rates, Mr. Trump is in trouble. Gerald Ford lost 48 House seats in 74 during a recession, but come on, we know what that was about. That was right after Watergate. That people were looking for an opportunity to vote against Republicans because Nixon avoided impeachment by resigning. And the Nixon pardon hurt badly. Ronald Reagan lost 26 seats in 82, an artifact of the suffocating stagflation that he inherited from Jimmy Carter. Barack Obama, modern champ of first-term losses, he absorbed a 63-seat meltdown in 2010 with Great Recession unemployment that spiked to 9.6%, and Obamacare, quite frankly. Control of the House gone, Mr. Obama resorted to rule by monarchical decree. It suited him, if not the country. Some say Mr. Trump needs a stronger public approval rating. It wouldn't hurt, but it doesn't guarantee off-year success. Franklin D. Roosevelt gained 9 seats in 1934. The presumably popular president coughed up an astonishing 117 seats in the midterms of 38 and 42. I would argue the country felt they needed a check on FDR. Likeable Harry S. Truman continued the dive, losing 54 seats in 46 and 28 4 years later. Then he gets to Eisenhower, one of the most beloved presidents, Supreme Allied Commander of World War II. Ike lost 18 seats in 54, and Republicans didn't regain control until 94. Now, here's another one I think he gets wrong. Just my opinion. The press worshipped JFK as much as it loathed Richard Nixon. So what? JFK, with a 5.5% unemployment rate in 1962, lost only 4 House seats. What happened in October 1962? The Cuban Missile Crisis. I would argue he was basking in the glow of his handling of that. In fact, in the movie 13 Days, it's the only time you see LBJ in the whole movie. The only time you see LBJ is that Sunday morning when the crisis is over. This is it. That's the only time Lyndon Johnson is in that movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis. He says, "Hey, Mr. President, bring on those midterms now." And I always wondered what happened in those midterms after seeing that line in that movie. Losing just 4 seats with a party in power, I think that is substantial. Now, the problem is in today's politics, who knows what the next few months are going to bring? I think the standard conventional harbingers are there. But the conventional wisdom just doesn't hold much anymore. And the conventional wisdom is that it is going to be a big Democratic year. Who knows, though? And who knows what the Democrats will attempt to do in the next month? Who knows what Donald Trump, who knows? The one constant, though, and Henninger doesn't mention this anywhere, is the enthusiasm gap. The personal hatred that the left has of Donald Trump is motivational. And the question is, will pro-Trump support be motivational enough to vote for people who aren't Donald Trump? As I said, it's really, really, really easy in the fall 2018 ballot to vote against Donald Trump. He doesn't have to be on the ballot. It's more difficult to vote for him. And that's a problem for Republicans in the House. Is that why you're seeing all the retirements? I think it's a factor. Nothing happens for one reason. There's another take on this that I want to share with you in 3 minutes. 9:51.
Join the Jerry Bader Facebook fan page. Go to jerrybadershow.com.